Blog Talk Radio.
Do not be afraid. The power of the Holy Spirit is with you. Is with you. Amen.
Come now, let us reason together. Question everything. Welcome to Sacerdotus Radio, a show on God, faith, the Catholic Church, science, philosophy, reason and otherworldly issues. Join the host as he tackles today's errors and refutes the fallacies of atheism and misconceptions on God, the Catholic Church, and science. And now here is your host, Sacerdotus.
Hello, welcome to Sacerdotus Radio. On today's show, I'm going to speak on certain things that are in the news lately. First, the other day, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of the Nation of Israel addressed a full session of Congress. His presence has been controversial and deemed as a disrespect to President Obama and Obama's administration. Some Democrats even refused to participate in the session. Elections will be taking place in Israel in about a few weeks or so. So this is another reason why some saw his address as a political stunt in order to get reelected. So people were criticizing him for going to Congress and even accepting to speak before Congress. Especially since he didn't go through the presidency or the executive branch. Not to mention that it was the Republicans who controlled the House and the Senate who invited him, so it was almost like a slap in the face to Obama that they're doing their own thing, which Obama can't complain a lot about that because he has been doing things on his own as well without Congress. So, and then another thing is that Netanyahu is up for re-election. So some people are seeing this as a 3,000, 4,000 plus mile political campaign trip where he came to the United States and spoke. And of course, it will be televised back in Israel and the headlines will read, "Our leader speaks before the Americans and he's unafraid," and blah, blah, blah. So some people see it as a political stunt and whatnot. So that's one of the complaints about that. President Obama called Netanyahu's speech political theater and said he offered no alternative in regards to what he was arguing for. Democrat Nancy Pelosi, who was visibly agitated during the session and held back applause, said she nearly cried at how condescending Netanyahu came across. And she said, quote, "I was near tears throughout the Prime Minister's speech, saddened by the insult to the intelligence of the United States. The condescension toward our knowledge of the threat posed by Iran and our broader commitment to preventing nuclear proliferation," end quote. In the speech, Netanyahu described Congress as, quote, "the most important legislative body in the world," end quote, which may have been an obsequious attempt to garner the favor of those present. He criticized Obama's deal with Iran over nuclear energy as a big mistake. Once again, he called Iran a threat to the world and voiced his concerns that Israel will be attacked by a nuclear weapon. Now, like I said in the beginning, the whole thing has been controversial, and understandably so. This guy is a head of state of Israel, and he just comes to our nation and wants to speak before Congress as if he has any right to do so. Now, I understand that Israel and the United States are friends, we're allies and whatnot, but the way he comes across is seems desperate, almost like somebody that's whining. Look at them, look what he's doing, a tattletale constantly. The United States understands what Israel is going through in the whole situation in the Middle East with Iran. It's not like we don't know what's going on. And while Obama might be doing his own little plan, which doesn't really make sense, he obviously has intelligence and information that he goes by in order to give him the confidence to allow Iran to work on his nuclear energy program or whatnot. But as Nancy Pelosi said, the way he came across was very condescending, almost as if the American people, the American lawmakers and politicians and leaders, the president, don't know what they're doing. And almost made it seem as if the United States doesn't care for her friend Israel. And that's not true at all. And Israel knows that if they are attacked, the United States will get involved and defend Israel. And Netanyahu is clearly up for re-election, so the timing is either was coincidental or was done intentionally. Why else will he come all these thousands of miles to Washington D.C. and speak before Congress when he's about to go through the whole election process in his nation? So it seems like a political theater, as Obama said, that he is now going to appear as this fearless warrior, this fearless leader who dares come to the most powerful nation on the earth, the United States of America, and voice his concerns, almost pretty much ordering the United States to change its ways in regards to Iran and be big brother to Israel. And the United States can't be big brother to anybody. We have to protect our own interests first, and then if we have the resources and the time and the global support, then we could go take care of other people, other nations in the world. And Netanyahu, he spoke for over an hour, I believe, and he just kept on stressing the fact that the United States doesn't seem to see the seriousness of the matter, and that Israel might be attacked by nuclear weapons if Iran is allowed to start or continue their nuclear energy program and whatnot. But he doesn't offer an alternative, as Obama said. He doesn't say, what should we do about it? How do we solve this conflict or the situation? He just pretty much scares everybody, making all these slippery slope arguments and whatnot, and doesn't offer anything in order to remedy the situation. So he failed pretty much at that. And I understand why many Americans were upset, especially Democrats were upset. And the Republicans, I believe, did that intentionally to pretty much slap Obama in the face, metaphorically speaking, because numerous occasions Obama took it upon himself to use his executive pen to do things behind Congress's back. And so now that Congress is under the control of the GOP, the Republican Party, the grand old party, then it seems that they are retaliating and they are doing things on their own without following protocol or not, and just inviting different people, different leaders. In this case, Netanyahu, who obviously has some tension with Obama and Obama has some tension with him, to speak before a full open session of Congress and voice his concerns and his complaints regarding the Iranian nuclear energy program and whatnot. And the United States has to be careful, because we don't want to be seen as favoring one side over another, because already the United States is a target of terrorists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and all these different groups see America as the so-called Great Satan who sides with Israel. And these people who are deranged in themselves and have a distorted view of Islam and Judaism and Christianity already have this hatred towards the Jews, towards the Christians, especially the Jewish people. And the United States seems or presents itself to side too much with Israel. Then that further escalates that hatred towards America, and that gives them ammunition to say to their naive followers, you see, that's what we have been telling you. The Americans are not for us, they are for the Jews. So America has to find a way to be for everyone, not just Israel, the nation of Israel, but also the others, especially the Arab nations who are allies with the United States of America. And they had to make that message loud and clear so that these terrorists don't go around using that as propaganda, saying, hey, you see, America always sides with Israel. They want to kill us. This is a war against us, Judaism, Christianity versus us, the children of Muhammad, of Islam, or Allah, or whatever you want to call it. And we had to fight back. We had to declare jihad against these two nations. And then, or hell's going to break loose. And God forbid they get their hands on nuclear arms and whatnot. It will really be a dangerous situation and whatnot. Now, does Iran pose a threat with nuclear arms? Most likely. They have shown in the past to be a very aggressive nation that wants to show the world that they run themselves or believe in the fist, so to speak. That they want to run everything via aggression, being the alpha, so to speak, instead of contributing to the global family with their culture, their achievements, their scientific knowledge, research, and whatnot. And not trying to gain all these weapons in an effort to present themselves as a viable super nation and whatnot. And this is where problems arise. And this is what happened decades ago between the United States and Russia. During the Cold War, they were basically who could be the most powerful, who could have the bigger army, the most weapons, the most powerful weapons and whatnot. And it becomes childish. And we just begin to lose our humanity, and animosity develops and suspicion develops and whatnot. And then it just hits the fan. You know what hits the fan, and it makes a mess. And hopefully we won't get to that point. So Netanyahu, I understand his concerns for his nation, and he should be concerned. But I think the timing was bad, especially in regards to the elections. And he didn't offer any alternative to the situation. And he should have been more respectful of the process, the protocol of the American system of having a head of state speak before the House and the Senate in a joint session of Congress, so that it won't come across as he's trying to bully himself on the pulpit of America, so to speak. And the next thing I want to talk about is Hillary Clinton. As you may know, Hillary Clinton was the former first lady during the Clinton, Bill Clinton years, but she also became the Secretary of State under the Obama administration. And there was this time she was involved in a lot of controversy, especially with Benghazi. And she claimed she didn't know anything was going on, and there was all this pointing fingers. Nobody knew what was going on, yet an ambassador was killed, soldiers were killed, they weren't prepared, they weren't protected properly, no warnings were given out, and it was just a disaster. And she just kept excusing herself during the hearings. What difference does it make? As if the murder of these people, these Americans, don't matter. And that's unfortunate indeed. And now a new thing came out that while she was the Secretary of State, she did not use the government email that's given to these officials when they hold this position. And she instead used a private email to conduct business. And this is apparently frowned upon in the federal government. Because the reason why they give you a federal email is for you to communicate, do your business, separate the business from the personal. It's more secure, it's encrypted, because you don't want people listening in or reading in to the communication of high officials in the government, right? And also because they want to keep track, they want to archive these emails and these messages for historical purposes and legal purposes. Whenever something happens, a scandal breaks out, whatnot, they could use these emails and phone calls and whatnot to acquit somebody or indict someone of whatever charge they're being charged of. So Hillary Clinton used her own private email to conduct American business. That's very problematic. Now, I personally don't care much for formalities, but I understand the process and I respect it. I mean, the church tells me to do something a certain way, to use a certain email, and not to use my own personal email. Then, of course, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to go around the church and whatnot and disobey. I'll try to make it into, this is my way of doing things. But especially with the government, somebody holding a position so high as Secretary of State needs to be more prudent, more careful of how to communicate via email or phone call or whatnot. Because you don't know who's listening, who's reading, who's wiretapping, who's hacking or trying to hack into these systems. And if you're using a private email, I mean, it's so easy nowadays to get into people's emails. Yahoo, AOL have been having a lot of problems with their security. And also Gmail, which is thought to be the most secure private email, has had its problems too with hackers breaking in and phishing people's accounts and stealing their passwords and whatnot. And then I just learned today that Hillary Clinton, not only does she have her own private email that she used for government business, but she had her own server in her house. And apparently she claimed that she doesn't know much about emails or technology. Yet this lady had a computer server in her home, which was able to host her email account and encrypt it and whatnot. So she went at all lengths to keep this email private and secure only for her. And even had a server installed in their home in New York State. And now law officials are subpoenaing the Clintons to get access to this server and these emails in order to figure out what's going on. What's the secrecy? Why the need for a private server in your own home? And these servers cost a lot of money, tens of thousands of dollars to buy, and even more to run. And they need to be maintained. They need to be hooked up to the World Wide Web and whatnot. And she had all of this installed in her home with a private email account and God knows what else. And then when you backtrack with the whole Benghazi situation, she might be hiding some information in those emails and that server, which will be detrimental to her, especially now that she might be the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party in 2016. So things are not looking good for Hillary Clinton right now, because she's suspicious already on the grounds of Benghazi, and now even more suspicious or more suspect because of this private email and this server, this private server that she had installed in her home, which is, I mean, disturbing to say the least. And I will continue following up on that and write about it on my blog and broadcast on Blog Talk Radio on podcasts whenever I learn more or this criminal charges filed or anything filed against Hillary Clinton, because I think this is important for all Americans to know. Everyone should be transparent, especially when you work for public office. You should be transparent. There shouldn't be secrecy involved unless it's for national security. And these things, you're working for the people. You're part of the public eye. You need to have your emails and everything accessible when they are ordered to be accessible or not. And lastly, the Supreme Court in Alabama voted, knocked down the previous court's decision on the federal level to remove the ban against so-called same-sex marriage in the state. And the judges made an interesting argument. They said that in an opinion over 130 pages long, they said that judges are not supposed to alter the law, that they're supposed to uphold the law and respect the law. And the law of the state says that marriage is between one man and one woman. So they're supposed to uphold that law and not alter. The Constitution doesn't give them the authority to alter laws that are in the books in the state. And they made this argument and they restored the ban on so-called same-sex marriage in Alabama. And I think hopefully this sends a good precedent throughout the whole nation, especially now that the United States Supreme Court is going to vote on the issue possibly this June. And it could legalize so-called same-sex marriage throughout the 50 states. Or it could keep the ones that already have it, or it could ban it completely. So we have to really pay attention to that. And again, the argument is a good one, because it doesn't make sense to have this nation, a republic, where we elect people, we elect the president, we elect representatives, senators, congressmen, and whatnot. We elect them to represent us, to do what we ask them to do, what we need them to do. And then to have these unelected men and women who wear black robes, judges, come and undo laws that we send people to Congress and to the White House to agree upon and make legal. And it's just wrong for these unelected people, these people that many times we don't even know about until we see them on TV or something, which happens a lot, especially during voting time. People don't realize that you have to vote for a district attorney or a judge and whatnot, and they don't even bother to look at that. They just look at the who's running for mayor, who's running for governor or senator or whatnot, and they vote for that. And many times they don't even vote for the judge or the district attorney or whatnot. So to have these people, these judges, these federal judges that are not voted in by the people but appointed by the president, come and just change laws at will, and in many instances ignore the will of the people, like with Proposition 8 in California, where the majority of Californians, which is a liberal democratic blue state, voted that they wanted marriage to be between one man and one woman. The majority voted for that. A liberal state, democratic blue state, voted for that. And it passed. The referendum passed. And then the Supreme Court, these judges come out of nowhere and says, no, it's unconstitutional. Completely knocking out the will of the people. And this is scary, because instead of the United States being a republic, representing democratic values to a certain extent, instead of being a republic, the United States, a republic under God, indivisible, etc., etc., as the pledge says, the United States becomes an oligarchy, which means that a few run the whole thing, instead of we sending people to represent us. A small minority of people, one or two or three or four people, are the ones that run the show and decide things. That's what this turns America into, when we have these justices legislating from the bench and ignoring the will of the people. Because then what's the point of voting and having a president and a Congress if you have these unelected judges come out of nowhere and knock laws down, knock the people's will down? What's the point of voting for that? Just name them the kings, give them absolute power, because they are already exhibiting absolute power. So something has to be done about that, because otherwise it will be a scary situation. And we're seeing that now, where all kinds of crazy things are passing via these activist judges who are legislating from the bench and imposing their own personal views and ideologies and politics into the law and onto the people, instead of actually obeying the rule of law. Because the judge's job is to rule based on the law that's already in the book. Their job is not to make the law as they go on their way during the trial or court or hearing. Their job is to decide based on the law in the books what's the right decision, the legal decision. Not to create their own law as part of their decision in a case or trial or whatever. So we need to really pray for the United States of America, especially these upcoming months. The Supreme Court really doesn't open Pandora's box and make things worse. And hopefully this decision from the Supreme Court of Alabama sets precedent in the United States for other judges to follow, and especially the 9 justices of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Thank you for listening. God bless you. May we keep. And you can visit my blog at www.sacerdotes.com. RationallyFaithful.blogspot.com and .wordpress.com, CatholicFaithSharing.blogspot.com. You could find me on Twitter, Sacerdotes. You could find me on YouTube, Sacerdotes with a V at the end, TVS, not TUS, and also on Google Plus, and of course here on the podcast on the Radio Blog Talk Radio. Bye now.